Ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, dearie, and a big hidey-ho.
That's our introduction for episode 10. After so long, we have finally reached the finale. We posted Series 8, Episode 9 yesterday. So this means it's probably Friday. The week is coming to an end. Christmas is just around the corner, so we're hoping you're all excited. Even if you don't celebrate Christmas, we're really hoping you have a restful holiday period, but we'll do all that shit at the end. How are you, George, in the 2 minutes since I've last spoken to you?
You know, something weird just triggered in my brain because of the Christmas season. And it's that, for some strange reason, Americans and British citizens have two very different melodies for O Little Town of Bethlehem.
Oh, really?
And I don't know why that is. O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by, out of tune. As opposed to, O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie, or something along the lines. I believe it's compiled from Ralph Vaughan Williams' work, the second one is. But, you know, it's pretty confusing, or at least it confused me the first time I saw the Goes Wrong show.
Goes Wrong show is good, by the way, but only in short bursts because it gets very predictable. It's good for like a 1 year special, like a yearly special, but maybe not a TV series.
Yeah, that's kind of my...
At least not a massively long one.
That's kind of
my
thing that I have with Mischief Theater in general. I send tourists to them. I don't send people who I actually want to have a good time to them.
Okay.
Or more specifically, I don't send people who I think are, how do I put this, because I've really dug myself in a hole here. I really don't like them, and they're very touristy, and usually when I send someone to Mischief, it's a pretty big sign that I don't have very much thought about their taste.
Okay.
Sodium pentothal, this podcast is for me.
I wouldn't mind seeing any of the Mischief guys on Taskmaster.
I mean, they're quite literally all very busy. Dave's doing something. I believe they're all recording a D&D podcast right now.
Does it go wrong?
No, shockingly, but it is weird.
I'll give them credit for this. It's very difficult to make stuff that goes wrong, wrong on purpose.
Farce is difficult, but to have two layers of a performance is incredibly hard. Just ask anyone who's done Noises Off.
Shall we take a look around and see what there is? With Series 10, Episode 10, excuse me, of Taskmaster
Series
8?
Right, let's nail this bitch.
Clumpy, sway,
yeah,
clumsy man.
Let's nail this bitch into the coffin.
Let's put the series to sleep and not have to talk about it again. For the foreseeable future, at least. Banter. The boys have got rat tails, which is very off-putting for me because I hate rat tails.
Oh, God. It kind of hit both this and the Series 9 finale. They were just physical appearance gags that, you know, don't really land in retrospect.
Nope, they don't. And it's just like, it's not a good hairstyle. A ponytail is just like sort of your whole long hair tied back. There's the man bun, which was in style for a little bit. It's not out of style, but it was, it's not as popular as it once was, but I wouldn't shame you for having it. This thing, I just can't see the appeal of whatsoever, because there's just a couple of long strands of hair, while the rest of your hair looks like a pretty bog standard short haircut. Obviously, it's fake, but I don't like it on you. And it's okay to make fun of this, because a person's hairstyle is something they can control.
You ever heard of a rat king? Speaking of rat tails, a rat king is what happens when a bunch of rats all get their tails tangled up into one thing, and they just go around and suffer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very fun. I mean, it's not, but it's disgusting, but... their tails are stuck together for the entirety of their lives. They're all subject to each other's whims. Feeding is probably not fun. There's only one that I think has been preserved to have been known to exist.
Sure, whatever. I just have a tendency to zone out really easily. Another thing of note. Ian is wearing a Ren and Stimpy two-piece suit. Yeah.
We're not doing the Hawaiian shirt counts for these.
Ren and Stimpy suit count.
God.
One. Ren and Stimpy is where that infamous were like that adult joke where I think Stimpy has the log between his bum cheeks, and Ren's got the saw attached to his groin area. It's a very common thumbnail for when YouTubers make videos reacting to adult jokes in kids' cartoons. So I shall do the prize toss this week. They have been asked to bring in the best thing that will actually change your life for the better the most, which is not complicated at all. So Lou is first up to bat, and she has presented a gift voucher for an appointment with her spiritual healer. Now, her spiritual healer is apparently her healer name is Jill in the Pyrenees, and she actually lives in the Pyrenees. Unfortunately, a flight or all expenses travel to the Pyrenees is not included in this voucher, so the cheapest way to get in contact with Jill in the Pyrenees, or JITPA, because we love on the fly acronyms here, the easiest way to get in contact with JITPA is to WhatsApp audio call her. Not even FaceTime her, WhatsApp audio call her. And I take umbrage with this because surely, I don't know exactly what's different between a spiritual healer and like a clairvoyant or something. But surely they need to be in person to sort of read your face. Because when people do palm reading, you need to obviously be in person for that. So I don't really see the benefit in this at all. And I just used a lot of big words in there that I only sort of recently found out the meaning to, which is very interesting.
It's a textual thing, spiritual healing, in some regards. That being said, it is bunk, and I will note that this is probably the first time that mysticism has been brought into Taskmaster, and it is not the last.
Nope, not at all. Excuse me. Ian, who's up next, has brought in a toilet stool, excuse me. So, just to get this totally clear before I explain what it does, are you supposed to stand on the stool, or does the stool go on the toilet seat?
You are supposed to be sitting on the toilet with the stool at your feet, bending forward. I know this because for some reason the Squatty Potty showed up in my advertisements one day, and I was thoroughly
Oh, is that what it's called in America? That's a great name for it.
Yeah, it's designed to straighten out your colon whenever you poo.
Exactly, because human beings are not supposed to poo like that. They're supposed to poo squatting. But as is most things with, as is most comfortable things, or as is mostly the way with humans, once we find a comfortable thing, we stick to it. And even if it's bad for us, we don't try to change it. Not much more to say about that, other than Greg really likes it, and Ian sold it very well.
Finally, a triumph for Ian.
But I think Paul sold his item the best. And what Paul has brought in is an electronic massage thing. So you turn the switch on, and it's got like two balls in between us at opposite ends of a stick going round in a circle. One's going clockwise, the one next to it is going anti-clockwise. It's like good for your... I mean, you can use it pretty much anywhere in your body, but I think it's designed for your upper back, or your whole back specifically. And the story that Paul attaches to the electronic massage is that he bought it as a gift to give to his mother at Christmas. And both she and him liked it so much that he went round on Boxing Day and stole it back.
Very good.
Yeah, I think one thing that Paul really excels at, especially recently, is attaching really great stories to his prizes.
I mean, I'm not really a fan of the electronic massage pad, just because it doesn't really feel like something that would change my life. What would change my life in the similar vein is implementing that into the chair.
I mean, you can get massage chairs at like shopping centers and stuff. You can even buy them to take to your house. Why did I say it like that? I said that like that Amazon had not existed. Like you on the tele shopping programs late at night, you call up and say, "Hi, I would like this sofa, this massage chair. Can you please bring it round?" And then it comes around to your house in like 2 months. But yeah, like I said, Paul is pretty strong at the story aspect, especially his chess trophy story. That was really good. But we've still got a couple of people to go. Sean Gibson is up next, and she has brought in these things called miracle pills. And the way miracle pills work is that you eat one, and then anything you eat after your miracle pill will taste really, really sweet. Like if you have something really bad, like a lemon or something.
Oh, how dare you! The lemon is lovely.
Hey, I that was not my coming up with. That was the show. Sean used that as an example. But that's the example she used. I probably would have... What's a really disgusting food? Which is difficult because I'm not opposed to... tofu. I don't like tofu. Yeah.
Okay, I... See, I genuinely am not happy to hear that. Yeah,
that I don't tofu, like
tofu needs to be very, very carefully treated and seasoned, unfortunately. I am personally more prone to extra firm and firm.
I like corn. I have a lot of plant-based sausages, plant-based burgers. The Wicked Kitchen stuff is pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Tofu as a substitute for meat? Absolutely not.
Yes. I was going to just research Wicked Kitchen, and I accidentally typed in Wicked Game, the Chris Isaacs song.
Oh. Regarding the so-called magic pills, genus species, I'm going to mess this up, I hate Latin. Sinispalum dulcificum, native to tropical...
Which translates to...
I have no idea. Native to tropical Africa, noted for its berry that, when eaten, causes acidic foods to taste sweet. This is due to a taste modifier, a glycoprotein, known as miraculin. Low sugar content, mildly sweet tang, yada, 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 yada. And it's in the fleshy part of the fruit. And it will bind to your taste receptors for quite some time. By which I mean 30 minutes. Which, you know, pretty good for something that has stuff going on and around it constantly.
Sure, like, as with most things you say, George, you lost me halfway through. But that is why I'm here to talk about the final prize up for offer, and that is Joe Thomas and his hair transplant for one singular hair. Now,
Joe,
this is a very interesting prize because it's a very novel idea. Like, just, yeah, being a completely bald and just getting a single long strand of hair on top of your head would be pretty interesting. Though,
with hair transplant, you do have to shave the donor area before it goes on. And that's besides the fact that there's no real guarantee that it's going to take. Because this is a bunch of organs, admittedly very small ones, that you are transplanting into a completely different part of your body. So, yeah, it could change your life. You could be in thousands of dollars of medical debt that are uninsurable.
Yeah. Hair transplants are risky as well, because there's always the chance they could go wrong.
Infection, yeah.
But I think with a single hair transplant, it might not go wrong. And even if you don't like it, just shave it off. It's in the case of Greg says, because he says, right in the middle of your forehead, don't like it? It's gone. Never to be seen again. And they also mentioned that hair transplants usually cost about £15,000. So a singular hair transplant would probably cost about £100, which I still think is too much. The average person, how many strands of hair does the average person have?
Oh, God. Average hair.
One eternity later.
How many hairs on a human head? Between 90,000 and 150,000. So 15,000 divided by 150,000, that is like 10p. I mean, you probably have to double it. You probably have to add a bit more for the procedure.
For anesthetic, for sanitization purposes, labor costs. Oh, God. I will also note, regarding hair transplant, it's shockingly not for people who are totally bald. It's really supposed to just fill in gaps that you have in the coverage. If you have the weird friar hairstyle as a result of male pattern baldness, it will probably it might work. If your hairline is receding, it also might work. But replacing...
Yeah, but of course, as we've learned, they're not cheap.
It costs $10 to kill a hair, USD, an individual hair. Transplanting one is going to be much, much more painful. And costly. All right, where were we?
The scores. Sean gets 2 points. Two people, Lou and Paul, both get 3. Then Joe, interestingly, gets 4. And Ian gets 5 points. Yay. What are your contradictions?
Squatty Potty was nice. How do I give... I'm going to put Lou down in 1. Also, it's a Taskmaster, and his name is Svelvin, and it's going to tell us what we should know. It's Taskmaster Svelvin. Breathe. Let's see. I don't really like the idea of having to spend thousands of dollars to travel to the Pyrenees. It's giving me another reason to dislike Lou. 1 point. As much as, and okay. Paul can take her place in the 3 slot, because there are some people who, for whom massages will be life-changing for the better. I might actually bump him up even further, because Sean's, actually, yeah, I am going to bump Paul up to Sean's 4, and then Sean to 3, because, again, the wording is, the best thing that will actually change your life for the better the most. Unfortunately, Joe lands in at 2 because, again, the cost of hair transplant will change your life for the worse. And it's worth noting that this has been adapted twice. Once for Portugal, once for Somestari.
Yep, I've got nothing to comment on with that. So I guess we move on to VT Task 1. Would you like to take this one, George?
Oh, God, I remember this one. Completely erase this eraser. Fastest wins. Your time starts now. I primarily want to talk about this because of what happens with Jill. Taskmaster has a unique way of breaking individual characters over time. It happened eventually with Mel Gedroych after she finally swore during the final live task of her series, after having been tortured with a beach ball multiple times. But interestingly, actually, I've forgotten who's first. YouTube.
Okay. It's Joe.
Okay. Joe initially breaks it into two pieces and then erodes it on sandpaper, which takes 19 and a half-ish minutes. But we'll get to what happens next. And I think this is actually a pretty good case for, unfortunately, I'm going to say this again, but Joe probably is autistic adjacent, or at least he thinks he is. And this is a pretty good argument for what happens later is a pretty good argument for him probably being on the spectrum. Let's see. Who's next? Ian?
I think Ian and Sean were shown together. I mean, Joe and Sean, excuse me.
Oh, Sean also decided to erase the eraser. And in a rare instance of fire being used in an English-speaking Taskmaster, Sean sets the eraser on fire. It does nothing. At which point it goes into the bush. Alex couldn't find it. Greg accepts that it has been erased after 9 minutes and 40 seconds. Which, not really great. I'm happy to say that, at least in some regards, the tasks for the final are shockingly good, or especially considering what's come before it.
These are some pretty good tasks.
Well, pretty good performances as well. Paul and Ian both end up flushing it down the toilet. After putting the eraser in toilet paper and getting 20 seconds in Ian's case, 34 in Paul's. Problem is, eventually...
What is the problem?
Joe eventually... this is the part where he starts to lose it, because we're approaching scoring.
Joe loses his absolute mind. Oh, also, can I say that there was a great bit, there was a very interesting bit of camera work in Joe's, in the as he's chucking the dust of the rub, the shavings of the eraser away, excuse me, the oil drum is in the foreground, and there's raindrops splashing on it, and there's sound effects to go with it.
Yeah, one of the Andes is having fun.
Yeah, sure.
For clarification for the viewers, again, I'm told that on set, Andy Devonshire, who directs the series, and producer Andy are just simply referred to as the Andes.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Andes as in like the mountain range or something.
No, I'm talking about producer and director Andy. Both of whom have been stuck with Taskmaster through season 1 up to the present day, I believe.
Yeah, they've stuck by the show and not left it.
It's also relatively interesting because I think Devonshire also directed Great British Bake Off, including the episode where James Acaster had the famous meltdown.
Started making it? Had a breakdown?
Bon appetit!
Bon appetit.
Everyone dies of laughter.
I have a wooden spoon with that engraved on it.
Oh, and yeah, a picture we've of discussed James, that.
Face. And it is great. It was a great Christmas present then, and it's still a great Christmas present.
Yeah, what's it like now to be able to not scratch all of your metal cookware? I wish I knew.
I mean, we have wooden spoons. Do people not use wooden spoons in the States?
Sometimes people just have metal spoons. And as someone who is desperately trying to find a decent spatula with a handle at a decent price, yeah, I do kind of envy you for actually having wooden materials in some regard. Anyway, Joe eventually loses his shit to Ian's surprise. Honestly, I think we should just put the entire meltdown in here. Because, frankly...
Sure, we can do that. Because,
frankly, it is so divine.
I'm not sure that is a array. I really.
I mean, you could see you as a mush by your feet.
Yeah, but it could no longer function as an eraser. It was no longer an eraser.
Mine's just underwater in a pipe.
But it's still an eraser.
It's not.
No one's ever going to use that as an eraser again.
If they really, really wanted to, they could find it and it would still be intact as an eraser. And also, I think that erasing is the act of using it to.
Where the fuck has this come from?
I don't know. I've so fed up of putting in like loads and loads of just genuinely like physical effort into the task. And then these other people found some swanky workaround where they put some fucking effort in. I don't know where that's come from, really. So I've been really nice so far.
We finally have a decent moment out of this series.
It is done. The deed has been done. Yeah, so talk about Sean, George.
Let's see. I actually think that, yeah, unfortunately, I think we did talk about Sean, but, you know, we'll get to it after I get to the scoring. It's a taskmaster to save spell. This task is a weird one because matter, as we all know, cannot be created or destroyed. It simply is. As such, to erase something from existence is, well, difficult. If not impossible, but unfortunately, that means going in the completely erase this eraser direction. Joe gets 5 points. And then I judge, and pretty much nobody else gets anything. Oh, and Lou also attempts to eat the eraser, which might have actually gotten her in some way, some perverse, sick way, with my judgment, 4 points to parallel to launch her near to Joe. But unfortunately, due to the fact that she did not chemically digest the eraser and end up having to go to ICU, she is also disqualified, leaving Joe Thomas with 5 points.
Yeah. But that's not what happened.
That's not what happened. Sterling gets 5. Joe Thomas, after his little hissy fit, gets 3 points for his trouble of actually erasing the eraser totally. Lou Sanders gets a...
He gets some bonus points.
His actual score is 1. Lou gets 3, but gets a bonus point for attempting to eat the eraser, I suppose. Paul Sinha gets 4. Sean Gibson gets 2. It's worth noting this task has also been adapted. I can't tell if this is the Quebecois French Taskmaster or if there is genuinely French Taskmaster now.
There doesn't seem to be French Taskmaster.
Okay, it's the Quebecois one. Completely erased, this eraser shows up in Le Maître de Jeu. Le Maître de Jeu. Season 2's episode, The Traitor. And Erase This Eraser, Basti Test, of course.
Yay. Yay. So the scores, Sean gets 2, Joe, Lou, and Paul all get 4 points, and that's adjusted for their extra bonus points. And Ian gets 5 again. Do you want to do Taskmaster Spelvin? Sing it for us, a little live jingle in the final episode.
It's a Taskmaster, it's named Spelvin, and gonna tell us what we should know?
Yes.
And Taskmaster Spelvin.
Yay. Hit us with it.
I did actually already go through the scoring. Oops. Everyone is disqualified except for Joe, who gets 5. Mostly because of,
good,
again,
good.
Completely erase this eraser. Obliterating it from existence is impossible due to the fact that yada yada, matter cannot be created or destroyed, and as such, the only way to interpret it, at least in my opinion, is to go straight through the definition of this needs to be erased. And as such, simply throwing it into the sewage system, losing it in a hedge, which will come up later again, flushing again down the toilet, does not count as non-existence. The waste is still there. It just has to be moved elsewhere so that we don't die of infections. As such, Joe Thomas gets 5 points, and I honestly, while I don't think that, and in the vein of James Acaster losing his mind during Taskmaster, I am also giving him 1 point for losing his shit.
Sounds completely and utterly reasonable. Now, onto VT Task 2. Make some tremendous pretend legs. You have 5 minutes to order up to 5 items from Alex. Once Alex has shopped for your items, you have 20 minutes to make your tremendous legs and then demonstrate them. Most tremendous pretend legs wins. Your time starts now.
It's the Marlena Dietrich Memorial Task.
No idea what the fuck that is. It's probably an American thing.
Oh, no, it's not American. It's very much international at this point. Marlena Dietrich was a noted actress and was particularly noted in the Blue Angel and German Expressionist films in general as a silent and occasionally talking noir actress here in the States, in Hollywood. And, of course, she was perhaps most famous for, one, her legs, and two, being a lesbian.
Joe and Paul are, again, shown together. And as if Joe Thomas wasn't having a rough enough time already this episode, this task just proves that even further. So he asks for hinges in his, like, list of stuff to get. And then he doesn't really use them as, like, because he... Does he use them as knees? I don't think he uses them as knees. But he makes the legs from the hinges that I mentioned, some black cloth and some wooden posts from wherever. And he sort of looks a bit like a ventriloquist dummy sat on the edge of the stool. So he stands behind the table, throws his pretend legs over the side. There's also a moment where he knocks over the table, where he tries to sort of get his feet on the floor to, I don't know, do something, walk away. I'm just going to say this now. I don't really care what he did, other than the fact that the table fell over, which was the only bit that I can vaguely remember, and that was fun to replay a grand total of 3 times in a row. Joe has made, get some child-sized snooker cues and deeply regrets it, wishing he got some adult ones. He puts a pair of wellies and pajama bottoms on them, and it does sort of look like a smaller pair of Paul's own legs. And he kicks a football around. And there's another note, editing note I love here, and I wrote down. So usually Joe and Paul are sort of like two sides of the same coin, in that both of them are pretty disastrous in their attempts, but Joe is really high octane and very gets flustered very easily, but Paul is really calm and collected. So while it cuts from Joe having like panically doing something, is that a word, panically doing something, talking really fast, moving really fast, it's just cuts to Paul slowly with a concentrated look on his face doing whatever the task requires to some capacity. And that's something I always admire about the editors. There's a lot of great editing in this episode, great editing choices. This has just been a common thing throughout the series anyway. But yeah, neither of these guys' legs are really good. Paul's is obviously better because shit doesn't go wrong. Joe just has a nightmare. And yeah. Lou is next, and in typical Lou fashion, everything has to be sexual, so, or at least alluring in some way. So she's got a pair of mannequin legs, hopefully not Bernard the mannequin, speaking of which he does make an appearance in the next task. She puts a pair of red fishnet stockings on the mannequin legs and some roller skates on them. The roller skates have like rockets strapped to them. Flo lights the fuses and the legs are propelled a tiny bit forward over the top of the caravan before they roll back and fall down. And the pair, Alex and Lou, also set off some like confetti cannons as the legs go on a little journey. And pretty on brand for Lou Sanders. There's a whole debate about are they made or not, because yeah, I'm not going to go into it. What are your two cents on this, George?
My immediate thought is no, you did not make those legs. DQ. Absolutely not, Lou. She's clearly thinking of the major award from A Christmas Story, the leg lamp, to be more specific. And
You know what?
I feel like there's a better way to do this. Like, number one, paper mache the leg.
Yeah, but would they have had would she have had the time to do that?
Nope.
Okay.
There has to be some sort of quick drying cement nearby. Lord knows it's the south of London, and they're fairly close to the river. Someone's probably done it.
I highly doubt they would have had the time for this shit.
No.
Not to dampen your lovely spirit, but it has to be done, unfortunately.
Are there any hardware stores close by?
From what I recall, the Taskmaster is on a road right next. It's like a long road because the majority of land is taken up by Duke's Meadows Golf Club. And the Taskmaster land is probably... What area would you say the Taskmaster house takes up? Two acres? 3 acres?
Oh, God. I know I have the listing here somewhere, but the house itself is roughly 1,000 square feet. At best, the house and all of its land takes up maybe 1.5.
Okay. But to my knowledge, there wasn't a hardware store nearby. But let's talk about Sean. So Sean has recreated the iconic scene from The Wizard of Oz, where the house, in this case the caravan, crashes down on top of the Wicked Witch of the East, squashing her, revealing only her legs and the... Which in the original book aren't they silver or something?
They're silver.
They're silver, made ruby for the film because the film was the first feature film in color. But yeah, they're red for the sake of this because the red is more iconic. But for some reason, we can see Sean and she screams, I'm melting," which is not a thing that the Witch of the East does. Why am I explaining this like such a nerd? Like, I'm literally naming every character appropriately. I saw Wicked in the West End about 6 years ago for a school trip. Wasn't crazy about it. Also, do you know in... Because Wicked's a very American in how it talks.
Yep.
But it's like the only canonically American character in that is Oz himself. So they don't have to talk with an American accent except Oz. So they all talk in British accents, and I don't really know how to feel about it.
And there's a bunch of Americanisms in the script. I will say this for Wicked. Holtzman's libretto holds that stuff together. Stephen Schwartz has written better, and frankly, I don't think at this point his work is much to write home about, but he's doing good work. What makes Wicked is Joe Mantello's direction and Winnie Holzman's book. End of story.
Okay. Wicked's approaching 20 years on the West End as well, which is pretty impressive. I think it...
Already crossed that over here.
Yeah, first came out 2003, came to the West End 2006. So, yeah. Wicked's been going for pretty much as long as I can remember here in the West End.
What's interesting... Not so very recently.
I love how we just got into a tangent about the Wicked.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say I liked the musical.
Yeah. It's, Stephen Schwartz, again, wrote a much better score for a much worse show, for The Baker's Wife, in which virtually none of his usual Stephenisms are, there. Because, again, Schwartz is the man who wrote Pippin, and, a lot of synths in that show, and Baker's Wife is very much acoustic, as you would expect something set in the French countryside to be.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I planned... They're making a Wicked movie, and Ariana Grande is Glinda, and Cynthia Erivo is Elphaba.
Yeah, Erivo I'm excited about. I'm less excited about Grande, especially what's come out.
Yeah, Cynthia Erivo is just a great... I've listened to some of us. I've not seen her shows, but I've listened to her voice. She's got a great voice. Let's get back on track. The Ruby Trainers, as we'll call them for the sake of this, find their way onto Alex's feet. He does the classic three heels click, and does he fuck off as well, or does it just go straight to the title card?
I wish it would have been really funny if he had just fucked off. I don't think he did.
Well, that's what's supposed to happen in The Wizard of Oz. I mean, this isn't even the real nerdy stuff. This is the basic stuff that everyone should know about it at this point.
Yeah.
Copyright.
We don't know where he went, because he never says there's no... Because I don't recall him saying there's no place like home.
Okay. But it's copyright with 5M at Taskmaster Productions. I don't know if has any meaning, but yeah. And finally is Ian. Hopefully we're not going to go off on a tangent with this one, but it's basically Ian has stood on some buckets. He's wearing some very long trousers and some fake arms. The buckets look sort of like hooves. And every time the bucket sort of falls down, it keeps like... Ian's twisted his ankle, and it's kind of weird. And this is one of the funnier instances of Alex breaking character, because when Ian, and I put this in massive air quotation marks, twists both his ankles, Alex just puts his head in his hands and runs away, laughing.
Good work, Alex.
And this is where we get the title drop. Greg calls Ian a clumpy, sway, clumsy man in the studio.
Yep. I'm bringing up No Face a lot, but I think he wants his clothes back from Ian.
Yeah, probably. That's really it. Ian does kind of look like some kids in a trench coat, that sort of thing. And I've also written... wait, so I'll reveal the scores first. Joe is last. Then it's Paul, Ian, Joe... I put Joe twice. Lou, excuse me, with 4 points. And Sean with 5 points. And Alex introduces the overall scores for the episode as it's tight at the bottom. As Mummy used to say, cut zoom into Lou Sanders. I think that'll probably be the description quote. It's tight at the bottom, as Mummy used to say.
Yeah. Lou? Tight? I doubt it.
It's the Mummy bit.
Yeah. But of course, Lou hasn't been tight for years.
Oh, dear.
Let's see.
The scores are... Joe, Paul, and Sean are on 9, Lou's on 11, and Ian's on 13. Do you have any objections to this task, George? Or do you pretty much agree with everything?
I have objections. It's a taskmaster, his name is Spellbin, and he's going to tell us what we should know. It's not a taskmaster, Spellbin.
Yay.
Let's see. Joe can consider himself lucky that I'm disqualifying Lou for not making her legs. Because he's up to 2 and Lou's down to 0. 3 points for Paul, 4 points for Ian, and 5 points, of course, for Gibson. Only real change is Lou getting DQ'd.
Cool. And the final VT task of the show goes to you, George. What do you have to say for yourself?
This was a nice one. This was a very nice one.
Not on location again as well.
We're back at Buckinghamshire for the final time. Follow the instructions on the signs and park this buggy in the parking bay. You have a maximum of 10 minutes to prepare your journey, during which you may not move any of the items on the course. Your journey must start from where the buggy is now. Also, you must be wearing this blindfold correctly at all times during your journey. Most accurate journey wins. Your preparation time starts now.
They had to put emphasis on wearing the blindfold correctly, because if not, some contestant would have been like, I'm wearing this blindfold, I don't know, as a bra or something.
As a choker, so, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm two very different things. Well, there.
Yeah. Let's see. I don't know the order for this one, or at least I've forgotten it. But we're going in alphabetical order as per the seats.
It was Joe, Joe and Paul first.
Oh, God.
And yep, that's the third time this episode they've been paired up together.
Unfortunately. Paul, of course, reverses into the camera, presumably one of the Andy's GoPros, before he had started. He thought he had driven to one of the targets and left the scooter to find them. He was nowhere near. He found his way back to the scooter after a significant portion of time, and he eventually parked, not in the parking bay. Let's just say that.
Yeah, that's a way of putting it. When we see the graphics at the end, Paul's journey is mental, especially with how much time he spends outside the scooter.
This isn't the first time that vehicles have caused comedy chaos in Taskmaster.
Absolutely not. And it's not the last time as well.
It's not
going to
be the last.
Ominous stuff, ominous sounds, yep. That sort of stuff.
Joe kept driving in circles. James A. Gaster called. He wants his bit back. He proceeded to knock over a mannequin.
My eyes are circles.
Yep. And knocked over the mannequin and the bells, ended up in an adjacent parking spot. I honestly have forgotten exactly what it is they want you to do with everything. So be right back while I get the list.
This will play the... I'll play the thing that's become sort of our new jingle now. Well, a new bit.
One eternity later.
Okay.
We're back.
Kind of. Do knock these bells off. There are two sets of bells, one of which needs to be knocked away. You, of course, need to park at the very end. And I cannot find anything about the mannequin.
Mannequin's just chilling there. It's probably Bernard, as I mentioned.
Yep. Oh, you do need to give the mannequin a high five. Or at least tag it somehow. At least that's what it looks like. In any case, welcome back, Bernard. We missed you. Taskmaster is probably the only show where a clothes dummy has more personality and a better arc than one of its major characters, pointing at Alex.
Yeah. Who are we on now? Lou? Have we talked about? No, Ian, sorry. Have we talked about Ian? We're approaching 1 hour, so we should probably get moving. Last episode was pretty short.
Yep. Lou drives around the car park. She gets off the scooter.
Did you talk about Ian?
Her way into it. Oh, no, not yet. Ian tries to measure time by saying elephants in the same way that Americans would say 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi, 4 Mississippi, 5 Mississippi, etc. to count his distance. And he also, speaking of Americanisms, he also takes from Teddy Roosevelt and walks softly and carries a big stick.
He
manages to complete every instruction and lands in the correct parking bay. Joe knocks over the mannequin. He knocks over the bells that were supposed to be knocked over and misses the parking spot by one space.
And it's a shame. Close. And Lou has a howler. That's the best way to put it.
Oh, yeah. Lou goes for a joyride. She proceeds to eat shit into a camera while trying to find the scooter. She keeps getting off the scooter and losing it. After 30 minutes, she reaches the parking bay, and Alex is also in that parking bay, having been instructed by Louise to stand in there and blow the whistle constantly.
Yep, he does. So the scores are Lou gets 1 point, Paul 2, Joe 3, Sean 4, and Ian gets 5 points. Good episode so far for Ian.
Yeah.
And with one final live task to go, aka probably the most anticlimactic live task ever, correctly wearing these goggles and with your eyes open at all times, retrieve your duck. You must stand on the spot and hold the stick by the handle. You must stay standing on your spot at all times. Fastest to hold their duck in their hand above their head wins. You have a maximum of 3 minutes. Now, the goggles I have to wear are inversion goggles, so they will see everything upside down.
Uh-oh.
And I think there's a bit of one of the iconic Taskmaster songs is played in reverse here.
Mm.
There was also a Taskmaster song from back in like series one or something. Can't really remember what one it was, but it played during the mobility scooter task. But it was one of those tasks you'd associate with like the first three series of the show. If that makes sense.
I will note, for the scooter task, there are two adapted tasks. One for Stormaster, one for Bossy Test. What a surprise.
Oh, okay. It's everything's pretty much that way. So here's how things played out. Sean and Paul both failed to retrieve their ducks. Lou got her duck just after the whistle was blown. Ian and Joe both dropped their ducks and then held up the other's duck, which means no one gets a single point. And the final scores of the episode are Paul on 11, Joe and Lou both on 12, Sean on 13, Ian on 18 points wins the episode.
Not enough to stop Lou from winning the series.
Yep, the final scores are Paul is last with 136. What a surprise. Then it's Sean with 143. Joe with 150. Pretty strong finish for him, given his record. Then Ian, 156. But it's not enough to stop Lou with 164 points. She has won the show.
Put the clown paint on and move it along, Louise.
obviously, Series 9 is canonically next. Will we be back for Series 9? You'll have to wait and see. It definitely won't come out until maybe February or March this year. But like I said, be a bit apprehensive because the future of this podcast is a little bit in limbo right now. But yeah, we'll see if Jova comes back. Until then, thank you, George, for stepping in. I really appreciate it. And now it's time for you to go back down to the basement.
Okay.
Bye.